Becoming a full-time writer can be overwhelming. Join Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon as they help you improve your craft and find your audience so you too can become a career author. This is the Career Author Podcast.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Career Author Podcast. This is episode 15. I'm Zach Bohannon, and with me every week is Jay Thorne. What's up, dude?
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I got my class is winding down, and I'm getting excited because my students are gonna they're all gonna publish something. That was sort of the goal at the end semester. So that's exciting, man. You kind of forget, at least I do, anyways. We've been at this a while and got a lot of titles out there, and we forget sometimes the excitement that comes when you hit publish. So it's gonna be cool.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because I was talking about that same thing yesterday with a couple authors I had lunch with. We were kind of talking about like a lot of the things we take for granted because we're in the weeds and we've been doing this for so long, you know?
Yeah. It's good to remind yourself of that, you know, how exciting that is and what an accomplishment that is.
Well, you know what I'm thankful for is that tax season's almost over. I'm about had it with taxes.
I made a math error and it gave both of us a heart attack at different times for different reasons, but we're all good, and it was easily rectified, but that was not pretty.
Yeah, that was not fun. So, you know, my situation still ended up being crappy, but you know, whatever. Good thing is I live in Tennessee and I don't have state income tax. So.
Yeah, that's definitely a positive. And
so anyways, enough about taxes. Because that's not why you guys are here, right?
Probably not.
We're not going to do a tax show at any point, so don't ask. We don't know enough. Cool. Well, the Career Author Podcast is brought to you by all our patrons over at patreon.com. For as little as $1 a month, you can support the show and gain access to our two monthly bonus episodes, which this month includes our breakdown of Dunkirk, where we'll be doing an analysis about that movie, as well as so much more. And you can become a patron of the show, just like our newest patron, James S. Aaron, did over at thecareerauthor.com. And yeah, so thanks, James, for jumping on board with us. And like I said, we got our movie episode coming up is going to be Dunkirk. So keep your eyes out for that and be watching that. If you're one of our patrons and you want to be able to participate in that show, that's going to be a fun one. Because like I said, we're kind of doing this different where I watched this movie, did not like it. And I want Jay to explain to me why I didn't like it, which I think that with his story grid knowledge and just overall story knowledge, I think he's going to be able to give me some pretty compelling reasons why that movie fell flat for me. So
yeah, cool. And a little quick side note here. I want to give a shout out to Sam, who was on our Authors on a Train retreat last fall. Sam's a filmmaker in New York City, and he was in town last night for an event, and I got to see him. And in my town, I mean Cleveland, and he was telling me that he brought his story grid book home from the Authors on a Train retreat, and now his production company uses it to vet their pitches to each other.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I thought, man, that's really cool that they, you know, and the guy, he's in a company with his sister and this guy, Austin, and Austin is the guy who like took his book and's like, oh, we got to use this for our pitches. So I thought that was pretty cool. I wanted to mention it on the air.
And I think, you know, just on that, like you brought something to my attention, like there's a lot of buzz going around about the story grid right now. And I think it's, you know, maybe I'm bringing up a subject I shouldn't, but I think it's kind of important for people to understand that, you know, the story grid is a diagnostic tool.
Yes.
You know, and so that's a little bit different than, like, I think a lot of people try to look at it strictly as an outlining tool. And that's not really what it is.
No, it's not a template, and it's not a recipe either.
Exactly. And a lot of people look at it that way, and if you are, then you're totally looking at it wrong.
Yes.
So that's just a little aside I wanted to bring up, because I've heard a lot of that going around, and I just, you know, like kind of know what you're getting into. So
yeah, and you know, I'm associated with the story grid people being one of the editors, but I kind of feel like we might have a story grid episode in our near future.
I'm sure we will. So. which I'm sure Christopher Wills will love that. So, It's not really him. I mean to call out. I want to call it Vaughn. That's him. Or Lon. I'm sorry. Vaughn. Lon. I'm thinking Lon Vaughn because of his last name starts with a V.
Yeah.
But I know Lon will love that. So,
yeah. But we converted both those guys, and they were pretty skeptical going in. So.
Yeah, and so congrats to Sam. That's really, really cool. So.
Yeah.
All right. So Jay, are you ready for Choose Your News?
I am ready for some news.
All right. So in our Choose Your News segment, I'm going to read out three headlines, which I think I came up with three pretty good ones as well. I got two fun ones. I got one really good one. And, anyways, I'm going to read out three headlines to Jay. And based on those headlines, Jay is going to, tell me which one of these three stories he wants to dive into the most. So Jay, are you ready?
Do it.
All right. So number one is, dude, where's my Amazon account? Number two, this is the lame one. I couldn't really think of anything good for. Your taste reflect your format.
Mm.
And my personal favorite, maybe my new favorite of all time, is I have to get ready for this one. Are you ready? AI, uh-oh. Get it? like the Nelly song, you know? So just to repeat, it's AI.
I don't know that song.
Yeah, you probably don't know. It was like when I was in high school, that song was popular, I think. Maybe after. I don't remember when that song came out. But anyways, I just made a complete fool of myself. So that's AI, uh-oh, like artificial intelligence.
Got it. Okay.
So a little spoiler there. So dude, where's my Amazon account? Your taste reflect your format are AI, uh-oh. What's stopping me now? All right. So which one of those interests you the most, Jay?
You know, the Ashton Kutcher reference, like that's the one I want. So do you want to do a quick summary of the other two first?
Yes. And you picked the biggest story gone around our industry this week, at least our crowd. So that's a good one you picked. Basically your taste reflect your format. Probably like that's just some new data came out, courtesy of this is thinknum.com is the website I saw this at. And basically it's just data breaking down saying that Kindle readers read novels and physical book readers read self-help. So basically it's just that like this person broke down like the sales numbers from Amazon for March. And as far as physical books go, 30% were fiction, 20% were children's, 10% were reference, and 40% was self-help.
Okay.
But with Kindle, the biographies were 10% and fiction was 90%.
Which is pretty consistent with what we've seen anecdotally.
And it's also, honestly, it's also consistent. I know this is why it interests me the most. This is pretty lined up with my reading habits because I actually don't really like to read nonfiction on Kindle. I actually prefer audiobooks. But I will take a physical paperback or hardback over a Kindle book for nonfiction.
Yeah, yeah.
But for fiction, it's like no comparison. I don't want a physical book for fiction.
Right. Same.
So that's that one. The other one is basically, and I'm gonna put all these links will be in there. But everyone should really go check out this one. There is a. Google's voice generating AI is now indistinguishable from humans.
Yeah, I saw that story.
Yeah, so why this is relevant is because there's a lot of I know there's some different people in our circles. The main one being Jim Kukral,
mm-hmm.
who fully believe that that AI like voice software is the future for audiobooks and for even for like audio podcasting.
Right.
And you know, I'm honestly like, I've been skeptical of it, for fiction because I really don't feel like anytime soon, at least that AI is going to be able to put the emotion into reading a fiction book and like do all the characters correctly, all that stuff. But I will say that this article here that I have, actually kind of makes me a believer for nonfiction.
Yes.
Where that type of stuff doesn't matter as much. So there's two, the reason I'm saying go listen to this is because there's two different voice samples of the same sentence being read. And one is by a human and one is by a robot. And I cannot tell the difference and it doesn't say which one is which.
Yeah.
So I would definitely recommend going out and checking this out, because it's very interesting and it's very relevant to us, because if this technology gets figured out, this could, you know, it could make audiobooks and like podcasting books type of thing, like more affordable for authors. It's not good for narrators, but, but it's, you know, this could make audiobooks and stuff a little more accessible. So
agreed.
So let's move to the main story, which you picked, which is, dude, where's my Amazon account?
Yeah.
So, I'm sure a lot of people have heard about this. It's kind of been all over the place this week, but basically, I believe it was maybe last week, later last week, hundreds of Amazon, this is what this article says. So hundreds of Amazon customers have taken to social media to voice frustration about their accounts being mysteriously deactivated with no reason given by the online retailer. For the past week, customers have reported that when attempting to log into their Amazon accounts, a message pops up stating that an account associated with their email address doesn't exist. It appears that both Prime and non-Prime members have been affected. Upon contacting Amazon, customers have been given different explanations as to why their accounts have been deactivated. Some claim customer service representatives couldn't give them a clear answer, while others were told they had violated Amazon's terms of service without being told exactly what they had done so. Authors were also affected in another way, as many authors poured to social media to say that they had lost thousands of page reads in Kindle Unlimited. And I believe some authors actually were losing their accounts as well, which was kind of all tied into the same thing. So pretty interesting. This is really this has made a lot of rounds this week. And it's, you know, it's interesting. We see these stories come up a lot. You know, you and I know we kind of have our opinions on it, but you know, this is weird, because this actually affected, this wasn't just authors. This was actual customers this time.
Yeah.
So Jay, what are kind of, you have any thoughts about this?
I mean, this is definitely a file in the nothing you can do about it and hope it doesn't happen to you, category, which means like there's nothing you can't, there's no preventative action you can take that's going to protect your account. I think what, really the only comment I have on this is that, I think it's time for Amazon to stop with the, automated or whatever the system is. Like, I think they're going to have to devote a little more resources to this kind of stuff, because simply using a tool like that and knocking down innocent authors, the troublesome part with that is like, you're kind of now fucking with people's livelihoods. And it's, if you suspect that there is something, if Amazon suspects something is going on, then at the very least, they need to be able to communicate exactly what it is and why they shut it down. And that's where they're coming up short. I don't have a problem with Amazon policing its marketplace. I don't have a problem with them protecting the customer or the reader experience. But there's no reason why the customer service team can't tell you what's going on, because maybe there's something you can do about it, or maybe there's not, but you deserve to know. And I think it's not an ethical thing, it's not a legal thing, but I think it's something that Amazon really, really should consider, because I think it's a really shitty thing to do to deactivate an account and then not tell someone why.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I feel for these authors. I mean, it would suck if, you know, to wake up tomorrow and like, you know, hundreds of thousands of page reads be gone. Like, and they like being told you're not going to get paid for these, or even worse than that, for your account to be shut down, you know? And I agree with you, like, you know, and I think I've talked about this in the podcast some, and, you know, I've seen Amazon from all different kinds of angles. My old job, we worked with them, and the only thing that ever seemed to get across to Amazon was that we was telling them no. And my old company was in a position where they could do that.
Right.
And they did all kinds of crazy stuff to us and tried to get us to pay them all this money for all the, like, they were trying and all, and they would threaten to hold orders. And my boss would just say, okay, well, we don't need you guys. Mm-hmm. And we would hold out. And then eventually Amazon would come back to us and they'd be like, okay, well, we'll figure this out later. Let's just get this PO in and get orders from you guys again. But that's like the thing. That's like a totally, like, authors aren't going to band together and like pull out of Amazon and Kindle Unlimited. You know what I'm saying? So it's, and like, if I do that, if I stood up right now and I said, well, I'm just not going to sell it to Amazon, like, it's not even going to blip their radar.
No. And even in that circumstance, like, at least there was a dialogue between your company and Amazon. There's like nothing here.
Yeah. And that's another thing I was going to bring up, is that we actually did have a rep.
Yeah.
Now the rep was terrible and it was hard to get a hold of him sometime, but we did have like a rep we could talk to.
And let's be real too. If the account is generating that much, either revenue, or if it's bilking Amazon out of that much money, then they deserve to explain that to that person. Like, if it's $5 a month, like, who cares, you know? But like, if your page reads are that much and your thousands and thousands of dollars are at stake, you deserve to know what's going on.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, you know, again, like you said, it's one of those things that unfortunately we don't really have control over. You know, the most we can do, and this was kind of a conversation going on in our career author Facebook page today, was, you know, it was coming up about having multiple revenue streams. And, you know, I think that that's kind of, that is important. You know, I mean, like, if you're scared about something like this happening, then maybe don't put all your eggs in one basket. And I'm not necessarily talking about go wide.
Right. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like, but I'm saying, like, maybe you shouldn't just depend on royalties for making money. Like,
that's the smart diversification. It's not a question of wide versus KU. It's about diversifying from royalties.
Absolutely. I think that's the big differentiator there. Like, if everyone has other skills, like, exploit those skills, you know, like, cause people will, you know, like, I was telling someone in our group, you know, that I had lunch with two author friends yesterday who do very, you know, a lot of royalties coming in from these guys, and they're very successful. But both of them were saying, like, that they hate writing blurbs and they would rather just pay someone to do that. Like, there's people out there that will pay for that kind of stuff.
Oh, I mean, yeah, writing is a base skill. I mean, there's an infinite number of things, of ways you can earn money from writing beyond the publishing industry. I mean, you think about, you know, there's technical writing, there's journalism, like, there's transcription, there's editing, like, there's just so many different ways that if you call yourself a professional writer, then you should be actively seeking out some of those other opportunities. And even if they're only, you know, a few dollars a month, like, that adds up, and that buffers you against something happening with royalties, not just Amazon, but royalties in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, it looks like they're getting a lot of stuff fixed, but, you know, hopefully these nukes don't keep happening, especially with no explanation, you know, cause it is for us, you know, like, even though you and I aren't going to go and, you know, complain about this stuff and spend a bunch of time on, or any time on K-boards, you know, like, scrolling through and like being all upset about this, it still sucks.
Yeah, it does.
You know? And so hopefully things will change, but on the negative side of it, I don't really see why Amazon has the motivation too much to do so. So
no, and this is kind of how they've operated. So, you know, they make these big changes and they whack people and then they roll it back a little bit. But those people that get whacked, like, that's sucks for them.
So, yeah. So my advice, if, you know, unless this has actually happened to you, you know, obviously be aware this stuff happens, like, but, you know, put steps in place to try to protect yourself in case it does happen to you. In the rare instance it happens to you, make sure you have things in place that you'll be taken care of. But at the same time, like, don't waste a bunch of time worrying about this. Like, you know, write, write your books. So, all right. So, on that, let's jump into to today's topic, which we're both really excited about this one. And I'll give kind of some context as to why I wanted to talk about this today.
Oh, good. I was hoping you'd mention the fact that we changed it at the last minute.
Oh, well, yeah. So, I'm going to do this too, to commit us to doing this episode next week. I'm going to actually say what we were going to talk about.
Okay. That's
so
cool,
that we can commit to it and not put it off. Cause I do want to do the episode. So we were going to talk about different tools that we use, to like for our writing, so like software, like all that, you know, like hardware, like different like tools that we use. But I just had got done reading a book that kind of has a lot of stuff on my mind. And even though this book isn't directly related to the topic we're going to talk about, which the topic, I guess I should mention, is writing to market misconceptions and truths. Though the book isn't like totally about that, it is in a lot of ways. And it just made me think about some different things that I kind of wanted to bring up today. So since that was kind of on my mind, we're going to push the tools episode to next week. And we're going to do this week, we're going to do writing to market misconceptions and truths. I guess the first thing I should say is that the book I'm talking about. So last week, Jay hit me up and we have a channel on our Slack for books we're reading. And he hit me up and said, "Hey man, you got to read this. There's some great ideas in here." And the book is called Perennial Seller, The Art of Making and Marketing Work That Lasts. And it's by Ryan Holiday. And so I immediately picked up the audiobook because, you know, if Jay Thorne tells you to read a book, you got to read it, right? So
of course.
But no, it was, and I was like, okay, I got to read this. So I got the audiobook and I listened to it. And I listened to it within just a couple of days. And it's like a 7-hour audiobook or something. But like I was making breakfast, I was listening to the book. I was doing the dishes, I was listening to the book. When I was taking my daughter to school, I was like, I listened to the book as much as I could because I got hooked on it.
And I read it in over like 3 days. I think I'd finished it in 3 days.
Yeah. So the premise of this book basically is, you know, how do you make art that's going to, like, how do we make our books where they will sell for the long term? You know, like to where it's not just going to be a flash in the pan and like you launch your book and it's done. Like how, like with these, you know, with this IP we're building, with these books we're writing, you know, we don't want them to sell for just a few months or a year. We want them to be selling, you know, like if I'm being honest, like I want, when I'm gone, I want my daughter to be making money off my books, you know, like that's how far ahead I look. Like
right.
It might not be a, go
right.
ahead.
Right. And it's not just fiction either. Like what we're not talking about is like the book is the cornerstone for the business model. And I don't think that's what Ryan's talking about either. So like if you only want to write like one book and you want it because like you have a consulting business around that idea, like that's different. We're not talking about that. We're talking about like you want to continue to keep writing and you want those titles to be relevant, whether they're fiction or nonfiction.
Absolutely. I mean, you're building a brand that you want people to keep coming back to.
Yes.
You know? But a big part of this book, a lot of it was about, you know, there's a lot of stuff about building your audience on that, but a lot of it is just about like knowing your audience.
Yes.
Like, you know, you have to know who your audience is. And it got me really thinking back to like, we hear this term all the time in our circles. It's a hot button term right now in right to market. Everyone talks about right to market, right? What, you know, you got to write to market, you got to do this. And we talk about it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that we ever actually sit back and say what it means. And because I hear there's a lot of negative connotations around writing to market, which I don't understand.
Much more so than positive, I believe.
Much more. And I hear this from successful authors who are just saying, "Oh, I don't believe in that right to market stuff." You know, like I just don't know why you would do that.
You're selling out. You're selling out. Your soul. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a couple of things that I wrote down that I want to get out of the way up front before we really dive into this. And I want to make this very clear and I want people to listen, okay? Writing to market is not the same thing as writing to trend or in a trendy genre. Let me say that again. Writing to market is not the same thing as writing in a trendy genre, okay? That's one thing. Writing to market is about doing the research to discover the type of story you want to write. Sorry, let me say that again. Writing to market is about doing the research to discover if the type of story you want to write has an existing audience, i.e. a market, not about finding what the current hot genre is and writing in that genre. Okay? So yep. Writing to market is not selling out.
No.
Writing to market is making sure that there is an audience for the type of stories that you enjoy and you want to write. Okay. So Jay and I don't write post-apocalyptic fiction because it sells a lot.
Like, no, because it doesn't sell as well as some others, and it's very competitive. So if we were selling out, we wouldn't be picking that one anyways.
Absolutely. You know, and it drives me nuts when I hear all the negative stuff around right to market. And here is where a lot of it came from in our circles. Okay. Chris Fox wrote a book called Right to Market, and Chris Fox's book is awesome. And if you actually read Chris Fox's book, he explains exactly what we just said about how you should go and research genres of stuff that you actually like and see if there's a viable market there for you to write it. His was military science fiction. That was a genre that he likes. And I know for a fact he does because he's a huge fan of like Battlestar Galactica, Star Trek. Like his favorite video games ever is Mass Effect, which is like one of the best stories in video game history, which is totally military science fiction. Like he loves the genre. What ended up happening was that a ton of people read the book and decided they wanted to write military science fiction because Chris had already done the work for them and found out that there were hungry readers for that. Even though they were fans of the genre, they wanted to write it.
Right.
You know, and the same thing is happening right now with lit RPG.
Uh-huh.
There are a ton of writers who see that these authors are cleaning up in lit RPG and they're jumping over and they're trying to write those books. Okay. You're not going to build a sustainable career like that. Okay. Like if you are, you're an outlier, like, because you're not going to be able to gather the like one consistent audience, you know? So in the Perennial Seller, there's one example that comes up over and over and over and over and over again, the book that I love and I never thought about until I read the book, and I know you know where I'm going to go, and that's Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Okay? So Iron Maiden is, for those of you who don't know, they're a heavy metal band and they've been around since 1975. They still tour today. Okay. Not only do they tour, they sell out stadiums, which is unheard of nowadays, and they fly from stadium to stadium in their own plane that their lead singer flies. Okay. Yep. And here's the really amazing thing about Iron Maiden is that, like, they could, and this was brought up in the book as well. And, you know, like, I think what Ryan said at one point in the book was heavy metal could be outlawed tomorrow, but it wouldn't affect Iron Maiden.
Right.
Because Iron Maiden is already, they've already endured like everything they could endure. Think about since 1975 to now, all the different trends that have come in out of music.
Yeah.
But you know who's been there the whole time? Iron freaking Maiden.
Yeah.
Because they know their audience and they serve that audience exactly what they want to hear.
And they've built this entire career with virtually no mainstream radio airplay, virtually no media coverage, virtually unheard of outside of fans of heavy metal. And these guys have done that.
Yeah. I mean, there was one fact that Brian brought up in the book where he, I don't remember the exact numbers, but like Iron Maiden has more Spotify streams than Madonna.
Yeah.
Like, and think about how much Madonna was on the radio and MTV in the '80s. Okay. Like I would bet that unless you were listening to music in the '80s, you've probably never heard Iron Maiden on the radio and maybe not even then.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, just to kind of put this into perspective, like, in the year 2001, when we here in America were on the back end of the boy band era, and the Billboard charts were being lit up by Lifehouse and Alicia Keys and Dido and Shaggy. I went and looked all those up. They were the big, you know, which, let's be honest, like, when was the last time you heard a song from any of those people except for maybe Alicia Keys? Okay, yeah. They were all flashing the pans. Iron Maiden headlined the Rock in Rio Festival in Brazil and played in front of, I'm not stuttering here, 250,000 people. Iron Maiden played a concert in front of 250,000 people in 2001. A band that writes about fantasy stories and all kinds of crazy crap, okay? So Like, the point is that Iron Maiden has a market and they're serving it. And they've sustained a career since 1975 on serving that market. And like, they're not sellouts.
Well, and so here's a, and I didn't know, we didn't talk about this beforehand, and I didn't know you were going to go here, but here's a nice correlation too. I've never heard anyone in heavy metal circles say Iron Maiden's a sellout. Like you never hear that. However, you look at a band like Metallica.
Yeah, I was thinking Metallica.
They
yeah.
get called sellouts all the time. So what's the difference? They're both heavy metal bands. They've both been around for decades. They've both sold millions and millions of records. Why is Metallica considered a sellout by a lot of fans and Iron Maiden is not?
Because they, you know, like the load.
they chased a trend, right?
They chased a trend.
They
yeah.
did not serve the audience they built. They were chasing trends. Not so much now, but especially in the 90s, they were chasing one trend after another. Every record was a new trend that they were chasing.
Yeah, and another example of that, which I think, like, that I thought of was, and look, Metallica ended up doing okay, but they did alienate a big chunk of their fans.
Yes.
And they got new fans, but like not the hardcore, like
not the thousand fans, true fans like Kevin Kelly, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, another really good example of that is Kiss.
Yep.
Like Kiss during the whole, like most of the 70s, they had their sound, they established it. Then disco got hot. They did a disco record.
Uh-huh.
Then the 80s, they started doing hair metal. There's an album from the early 90s called Carnival of Souls. That's a grunge record that Kiss
yep.
did. You
yep.
know, it's like, And they alienated a lot of people, and I don't really feel like really came back on their own until 96 when they got back together and they started playing the old stuff again
right.
and put the makeup back on and did all that stuff, you know? So it's like, you can't, like, if you really, and those Metallica and Kiss are also outliers in a way that like, they've obviously done well for themselves. Okay. So, but like, you're probably not going to have as much luck as Metallica, you know, like you're probably not going to get your lit RPG book played on the radio or something, you know, right. you're not like the equivalent of that. You know what I'm saying?
So let me ask you a question, Zach. Let me pretend for a second here. Well, like that's fine for you guys, but like I'm an artist. I'm not a sellout. I'm writing original stuff. You and Molten Universe Media and Thorn, you guys are writing just cookie cutter shit, and you're just making your covers look like everyone else, and your titles are like everyone else, and you guys are just, you're just pandering, you're selling out, whereas my stuff is like true art, and I can't define it, I can't put it in a box.
Then like understand your expectations of what you're going to get out of that. And don't be mad when it doesn't sell.
Why wouldn't it sell? Don't people appreciate good art? Like they'll come on my book and they'll start reading and then they'll just be buying it left and right because I'm an artist, right?
Good luck getting discovered in the 4 million books on Amazon that way. Like, I mean, it's just like, you can think that way and I, you know, it's fine. Like if you want to think that way, And you know, you might become an outlier and you might sell a bunch of books. I don't know, you know, but,
or you might not want to be a career author, and that's fine too.
And that's totally fine too. But like, you can't do that. Like you just have to understand what your expectations are. If you want to create like art, and I'm not saying you can't write to market and not create art either. Like you and I pay a lot of attention to our craft. You know,
we work our asses off on these books and we make them the best we can possibly be. We're not half-assing it or rushing the process or anything like that.
And I think that really gets lost too, because we talk so much about marketing the books and all this stuff that I think it kind of gets lost. That like, we really do like work our asses off to make sure that our stuff is good. Okay. And, but that would like, if we came on here and talked to you guys about that every week, we'd probably bore you to tears. Like, So we're only going to do those episodes every now and then, but it's just, you're putting yourself in a much tougher position to actually, if your goal is to sell and to be a career author, you're putting yourself in a much tougher position if you don't have an audience you can identify, because if you are expecting that you're just going to have right? This great, you know, you have this great, really original, unique idea and people are going to flock to it. Okay. Well, go look at Hollywood. Okay. Like, why do you think that the companies are doing remakes and sequels all the time? And maybe it's kind of a bad example because like that kind of is selling out in a way. So maybe it's not the best parallel.
Well, here's a parallel that Ryan mentioned in the book. I think he was talking about the film festivals.
Yeah.
Right. And like, you know, like the number of films that like Austin's a big one, right? So, or Cannes is a big one. You get like, it's almost impossible to get in them. And then even if you're in them, like the number of films who that make it into the film festival that then make any money is like 0.000%. Like yeah. The way media is today, if all you're doing is writing stories that fuel your own fire and then throwing it up and on Amazon and hoping it sells, it's not. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, I give you junk all the time. I love coming back to this about your book that you wrote that's Game of Thrones meets the Blair Witch Project.
Right.
Like, you're by trying to reach both those audiences, you're going to reach neither.
Right.
Because that's just not like one out of 1,000 people might like both those movies or mm-hmm. or that show / book. And then that movie, you right. know? So right. it's just like, it's so if you're really wanting to do this and be a career author, it's worth your time and your research to really make sure the stuff that you want to write has a market, an audience to market to. And even if it might be a small niche, mm-hmm. but like, you know, it's not selling out as long as you're writing what you want to write.
And I'll say something here that is totally opinion. I think you'll agree with me, but I could understand people not agreeing with me. I think you make better stories when you are serving a specific audience.
I agree.
Because you have to be a super fan and you have to know what's out there, what people want, and you can't just tell the same story over and over again. It's really challenging to write post-apocalyptic stories that are different from each other. Like that takes a lot of work. And I think that makes you a better writer. And you know, the flip side to that is like you brought up Lit RPG. That's a great example. Like that's hot right now. So if you're writing to that now and you're not crazy about it, how many more Lit RPG books do you have in you? And how yeah. many are you going to get out before someone else declares the newest trend? And we know trends are changing faster than they ever have.
Well, and staying very specific to that genre, like that's definitely a flash in the pan thing because of how fast virtual reality is changing.
Yeah.
Like, you know how fast those books could become irrelevant?
Right.
Like, just because, like, you know, I told my story about the Star Wars thing I went and saw in Orlando, and yeah. I didn't even know that was out there, you know, like that kind of virtual reality experience was out there. So if you're writing these like virtual reality, fantasy, science fiction books, and just to try to make a little money now, like, okay, that's great. But like that work is not, that's not going to be a perennial seller.
No, you know what they're going to become? The Lit RPGs. And again, people are going to, I might get crucified for this, but I'm not a fan of Lit RPG at all. And I'm just going to be honest about it. And I think Lit RPG is going to be, it's going to fall on the heap of sci-fi stuff. Like the corny 50s alien invasion movies, like, or those types of like sci-fi books. Like once that era passed, no one's reading that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's where Lit RPG, I think there's going to be a point where Lit RPG isn't really culturally relevant. And then no one's going to go back and read it. Whereas if you're writing like mysteries or thrillers or more traditional sci-fi, if you're serving a market and you have something people want, then you're talking about years, not weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and sadly, you know, I see authors who are just like, and some friends of mine, to be honest with you, that are just, they're jumping from thing to thing. And then, you know, they come to me and they say, man, like, I'm so jealous that you're getting to write full time, and I wish I could do that. And it's like, well, you're not focusing on, like, you're not building one audience. Like, yeah, you're just jumping from trend to trend, trying to catch a flash in a pan.
Yeah, you have to ground yourself somewhere. And it doesn't mean you can't write weird, quirky stuff. But, like, if you want to be a career author, you need a back catalog. You need something to anchor your brand. You need something to anchor your catalog. And, you know, you look at Stephen King. Like, Stephen King's a great example. He got to a point in his career where he could write pretty much whatever he wanted, but not at first.
Yeah, and I think people miss that.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people, like, when you bring this up, a lot of people point to him.
And when, like, I was
an outlier.
Yeah, yeah. And when I was growing up, and I know we've had this conversation in different places before too, like, when I was growing up, like, he was considered a hack.
Yeah.
Like, people, the literary community really, like, turned their nose up at him. And he had this reputation of being a sellout. Like, he was just writing this, like, you know, gory horror, like, this, you know, he was kind of a, he was considered a lowbrow writer. Like, he wasn't literary. And now he's, like, his own genre. Now he's, like, an American institution. And he's an outlier too, because most of us will never sniff that kind of success. But the point was, like, he served his market, and he wasn't off chasing trends on his first book or his second book or his third book or whatever. Like, he stayed pretty true for a long time.
Yeah, and he has gotten to a position where, like, you know, people will follow him.
Right.
Like, it almost doesn't matter what he writes, people will read it, you know? And we all aspire to get to that. Like, we all want, like, and I know that, you know, we're trying to build our brand where people, you know, want to read us, but, like, I'm not going to pretend like, you know, I can go write whatever I want and, like, all these people are just going to follow me. Cause that's not the case from where I'm at right now.
No. And the way, when I get into these conversations with people, and they're like, you know, I ask them, like, well, you know, what kind of story do you want to tell, or what kind of book are you working on? And as soon as someone hesitates, I know that they're either chasing a trend or they don't know what they're doing. Like, yeah. If I hear, well, it's kind of like this, I'm like, stop. I'm like, let me ask you this. If you could find a Barnes & Noble and walk inside, what section of the bookstore do you go to first? I'm like, well, I'm like, no, first, where do you go first? I'm like, thrillers. Then that's what you should be writing.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what it is. And that's not writing to market. That is being a fan, understanding the genre and serving it. And I know that you and I, it's not all we read, but man, I read a ton of post-apocalyptic dystopian stuff.
Yeah,
a
me
ton.
Too.
I'm reading it all the time because I love it, not because I think it's a trend or I think I'm going to cash in writing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. So I think it's important, you know, just to kind of go back and maybe wrap this up a little bit. Like, you know, if you're going in and you have this, you know, if you're wanting to be a career author but you're automatically, like, have this bad connotation of, like, you hear right to market and you're just like, oh God, like, I would really challenge you to, like, really think about that a little bit and really understand and break down what it means. Because, like, if you can narrow down a market to serve, like, from the get-go, it's going to make things, it's not going to guarantee anything. I'm not going to say that. It's not going to guarantee that you're going to sell a ton of books, but it's going to make it a hell of a lot easier for you. It's going to make it easier for you to figure out what your cover needs to look like, to figure out what your title should be, to figure out, you know, like, things in your plot, like, what kind of twist should you throw in there? Like, what kind of character archetype should you have? Like, all that, like, it makes everything easier if you figure it out from the get-go instead of just writing some book and then putting it out there and then, like, twiddling your thumb, like, figure, like, why didn't my book sell? Well, because you didn't, like, figure out the audience you're trying to serve, you know?
Yeah, and even if you do, like, if that audience you want to serve is an audience that's interested in a trend right now, I think that's a bad move. And this is highly subjective advice. People are welcome to disagree, but my advice to anyone starting out right now, I would say align your reading preferences to an established genre. something that's been there, something, you know, romance. People always want love stories. People are always going to want thrillers. They're always going to want mysteries. Like, that's, if you're starting out, like, that's where your focus has to be. Unless, the only exception to that that I could think of off the top of my head is if you already have an audience from something else.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're into television, or you're a television star and you do a lot of, like, you know, virtual reality shows, and then you write a lit RPG book, like, that would make sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, like, because you can't be a career author if you don't sell books. And if you're just writing what you want to write, you're not going to sell books.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I had something to say, but I kind of lost my train of thought there. So maybe that's a good, maybe that means that it's a good time to kind of wrap it up maybe. So,
yep. All right.
All right. So, so I'll put, hopefully that conversation was good for everybody. You know, I definitely recommend this book, Perennial Seller. Again, like, this is just a book that Ryan Holiday has no freaking clue who we are. Even though reading this book, he definitely felt like our people.
Yeah.
This book definitely put into perspective to me that, you know, Jay and I, that we're, you and I are doing a lot of the right things and that we're on the right track. And it kind of opened me up to, like, what I feel like the next step should be, you know?
Yep.
So I'll put a link in the show notes to Perennial Seller by Ryan Holiday. I absolutely recommend that you read this. Even, you know, obviously everyone here is off, but it's a great book if you're looking at. I recommend this to a buddy of mine who's starting a coffee company.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's starting a coffee roasting business. I said, dude, you need to go read this book.
Yeah.
You know, so. So, I guess just to kind of wrap things up here, just a reminder, gosh, we got it's Sell More Book Show, man. We're only going to be able to talk about this for a couple more weeks.
Weeks. I know.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, the Sell More Book Show is in Chicago, May 5th and 6th. We definitely sold some tickets in the last week, but we still got some left. So if you know, it's not too late to book your flights and stuff to come to Chicago. So if you're interested, check that out at sellmorebookshow.com/summit. And then you can also check out everything that we're doing over at thecareerauthor.com, including, if you want to contribute to the show and become a patron, you can see all the kind of cool offerings and stuff we have over there, including our bonus episodes and everything. And there's even samples of those up where you can kind of see what you're getting into. So cool. So I think that's about all we got for this week.
All right.
So I'm Zach Bohannon. That's Jay Thorne. And we'll see you guys next week.